It's Morning Edition here on Boise State Public Radio News. Good morning. I'm George Prentiss. The pause button has been pushed on the House impeachment inquiry hearing, so this is probably a good opportunity to talk a bit about the live coverage, the analysis, the spin that goes with all of that. Dr. Seth Ashley is here. He's an associate professor in the Department of Communications at Boise State University. He has authored and co-authored many studies on media literacy and is the co-author of American Journalism and Fake News, Examining the Facts. Seth, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a bit about what we're in the middle of. The U.S. House has taken a pause, but this is a unique moment in contemporary history. If we choose, we can get an unfettered story in front of us if we watch gavel-to-gavel coverage. That said,
but who has time for that?
You read one headline, ratings for first impeachment hearing show healthy interest, CNN. Another headline, Americans ignore Democrats' demands to watch their impeachment farce, Federalist.com.
Yep, I see a lot of that. It's hard to even know. I mean, Nielsen says, 13 million people are tuning in at the, that's not even that great if you compare it to a primetime TV show. They do 10 to 20 million routinely, right? And so, but of course, people are streaming online. That doesn't count people watching on C-SPAN and PBS. So people can get it in other ways. But that's my biggest concern. I think, especially when we get to news literacy, getting people talking about not just the political divides, but the divide between people who are paying attention and people who are tuning out. And that's what, with the high choice media environment of the digital age, it's easier than ever to just not pay any attention at all. And people say that politics is working well when people can just tune out and things go on, but I don't know if we're there right now. And I think it's true that people should be doing their best to try and get a sense of what's going on and find the closest version of the truth as they can.
And you write a bit about a filter bubble. Indeed. Define that. I'm pretty sure I know what that means. I guess the question is how thick that bubble is.
The concern raised a decade ago now is that algorithms would lead people into these bubbles of confirmation of their pre-existing views and ideas, and you wouldn't be exposed to diverse points of view. And especially on the internet, we could see how that might happen. People have found it's more complicated than initially thought, that some people are more likely to experience that than others. In fact, some people go online and they can actually get really diverse information, especially compared to someone who's watching the same cable news channel for 3 hours every night. That's a filter bubble. So we're trying to tease all of that out and figure out, what's really going on. It appears that, a lot of people do actually get exposed to more diverse ideas when they go online, but it is still those people at the extremes who are more subject to this. And they are also the ones who, they show up and vote, and they are the most vocal, and they write letters and donate to campaigns. So it's a concern. I mean, it gives the appearance to the rest of us that those people are, that's how we all are, when actually most people are either they're tuned out, they're not voting at all, they're, not extremely engaged in the process to begin with. So we have to work on all of those pieces.
How do you define news literacy?
I think of it as the knowledge that you need to be a good critical consumer of information. And I think I separate that a little bit from the skills that that you employ to do that. So when you fact check and verify and all, figure out where to get good information, this is what some colleagues and I have been talking about lately, is that those are really outcomes of news literacy. If we think of, literacy traditionally being the ability to read and write, there's a knowledge base that you need to be able to do that. And so that's where we've gone with news literacy, and which is different from how some other people approach it. But we've really been focused on what people need to know about the news media environment, the news media system, how news is made, where it comes from, how the digital environment works. And that seems to be promising in terms of getting, we found relationships with people that know more about that stuff also are the ones who know more about current events, and they know more about, they're more likely to be engaged in the process in various ways. They feel more politically self-efficacious, meaning they think their voice actually might matter, that they could have a say in the world, which is important, because if you don't think your voice matters, why bother? Who cares? So that's, we're not just making this up. It's supported by at least some emerging evidence, and that's why we think it's important.
But to your point of how news is crafted, who are the folks pulling the strings, who are the producers, who are the news editors, who are the folks putting things out on social media.
Right.
That's really what you're delving into.
Indeed.
Is to understand that a little
more. And there are certainly different levels of that. I mean, you know, just pointing out to some people that, you know, most American news companies are for-profit businesses, that's a surprise to some people, or they haven't thought about it at all. And so just getting some basic understanding of the news media environment, how the, you know, the role of the FCC, really well-documented effects of media, like the what we call the hostile media effect, where two people can look at the exact same piece of content and find it biased against their point of view. Two people on opposite ends of the spectrum can find the same news as biased against their point of view. That's something that researchers have studied for years. And so the idea that media is always hostile to your point of view, hostile media effect. So, you know, if people have an understanding of that kind of thing, they seem to know more about the whole system. And we think that's a good thing.
And to your point, here's another headline from Salon. We're watching the same impeachment hearings, but seeing vastly different shows.
Indeed.
That's pretty much where we are. The latest NPR Marist poll indicates while 13 million people may be watching, it's not really moving the needle for most people.
Which is not surprising, considering where we are and how kind of dug in people are.
I want to point listeners to an article that you just wrote for The Conversation. Beyond fact-checking, five things schools should do to foster news literacy. You are gearing this to public schools, I'm assuming.
Really, anyone. I mean, the conversation actually wanted to put the focus on K-12 because it's increasingly being talked about there. I mean, my focus has been with college students. You know, I think this is stuff that everybody at some point needs to encounter. Certainly, there are different ways of doing it that are appropriate to different age groups. But I think we can start pretty early, at least getting people to ask questions about how news is made, where it's coming from.
The question that
what happens when we go online
really pops for me that you put out here is, am I the customer or the product?
If you're not paying for it, you're the product being sold. Certainly more complicated than that, but that's the basic advertising supported model of media that's been around for a century. And so the fact that the digital age brings that, but on steroids, is important. And I think people need to be aware of how these companies make their money and how your data becomes, monetized.
I'm going to guess that a number of young men and women in K-12 schools don't understand that.
Probably.
And I think that that's really why you want to pose that question probably earlier than later.
Indeed. And I think it can actually be easier to get people talking about the media system instead of individual pieces of content, especially as politically charged as everything is, you know. Teachers are, you know, they avoid this stuff because they say, well, I can't bring in CNN. I can't, you know, because I get a reaction, or if I can't bring in Fox because I get a reaction. So, but you can avoid that to some extent by focusing on the bigger picture. And so that's why I think this can actually be a good way to teach this stuff in schools, because it can avoid some of those. I mean, everything is, you know, it's all political, certainly, but you can avoid those questions of partisan bias. And really, when you ask people of different stripes how they feel about this stuff, it really is a nonpartisan issue when we talk about where and how we get our news and information. I think a lot of different people can get on board with these questions about how do we support a well-informed society? And that's where we need to be.
The young men and women who are in your classes at Boise State, well, they're the gatekeepers of the future. Can I ask, do you have a sense of their level of engagement or lack thereof in the impeachment inquiry hearings?
I don't think it's on their radar to a big extent. I mean, they're busier than ever, you know, and I'm really sympathetic because we have a lot of students that you know, have to work. And while they're also managing school and maybe family and other things. So I'm sympathetic. I think there's a lot more demands on them these days, but I think they're smart too. And they're savvy, and they, you know, I worry that they're just the worst thing that could happen is if people just get in this position of pure, you know, skepticism to the point of cynicism, where you just can't trust anyone and you think it's all, you know, everyone's out to get you and there's nothing out there you can rely on. I certainly preach healthy skepticism, but I also want people to know that, like, nothing's perfect, but there are certainly places you can go that will help you achieve your goals and meet your needs in terms of being a citizen in a society.
Well, they are a voting age. Are they politically engaged, or do you sense they will be in 2020?
Hard to say. You know, I think they're kind of just in that position of they're just new to all of this and being drawn in. And so that's just what I do, is I try to get them to appreciate the big questions and to, you know, not let it be ruined by all the darkness. But, you know, these are just interesting questions about how we run a society and what we all want to do together. If they can, you know, if you can push them in that direction and get them excited about, oh yeah, these are interesting questions, and it's hard to determine exactly what the answers are. I think that's a good thing.
And to that end, they might be better equipped to cast a vote.
I hope so. It's just hard because our brains are so wired to stick with our tribe and respond to emotion over reason. We have to remember, we're still, in terms of our brain structure, we're mostly still living in the savannah and watching out for saber-toothed tigers or whatever. I mean, our brains are very primitive, even though, you know, they've been thrust into this digital age. And so so we just have to remember that we're really wired for these pretty basic instincts. So I think understanding that a little bit can help us just all kind of slow down when it comes to how we react to some of what we see.
He is Dr. Seth Ashley, Associate Professor in the Department of Communications at Boise State University. Seth, thank you.
Thanks, George.